Hi everyone, I'm your host NG and welcome to the 55th episode of the podcast, Sounds About Right, Audiobooks Help Us Understand the World. And on this episode, I was joined by William D. Eggers, co-author of the book, Bridge Builders, How Governments Can Transcend Boundaries to Solve Big Problems. And throughout the book, fascinating and instructive stories about some of today's bridge builders, federal, state and local government leaders who transcend boundaries, partner across sectors and get stuff done. Trust in an effective government has never been more important than today. And Bridge Builders provides a new model that current government decision makers, as well as young leaders who aspire to public service, can learn from and apply right now to transform government and restore public trust. It was great discussing the book with Bill, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So to begin with, I want to touch on the vending machine form of government that's mentioned in the beginning of the book. What in your experience of working within governments has brought the conclusion that this is a way of working which no longer works?
Well, it's funny. We've had this mental model for years, and it's certainly, we see this in the media and even by some politicians, legislators, of this vending machine sort of model where you have a problem. You put money into it, you form an organization, and out should pop the results. And of course, that's not how government actually works today, and especially today, because most societal problems extend far beyond any legislatively defined boundaries that we have. And there's really no low-hanging fruit, no issues with really obvious solutions. I mean, consider something like homelessness. Is it an economic problem, a jobs problem, a mental health problem, a drug problem, a family problem, criminal justice problem? And is it a problem for government or nonprofit organizations, individuals, local governments, central government, the private sector? And the answer to all these questions is yes. And so the solution must go far beyond the old lines that we've drawn to address them.
Absolutely. And were there like common mistakes or lapses that were being made in your experience of working with governments in the past, Bill?
Well, you know, we've seen so much innovation, reinvention, reform of government over the last 3.5 decades. You know, between Don and I, we've had over 75 years experience working on public management. We've written close to 35 books between us. And it's something we're incredibly passionate about, is making government work and making it work better. What we haven't seen is a whole new way of looking at government, a new model of governance for the 21st century, a strategy for how to actually not only accomplish big things, address big problems, but even in the day-to-day delivery of services. And we think that mental model of a vending machine is one of the reasons why. Because in fact, what we need is a model and a management theory that really understands how government operates today, which is across sectors, across levels of government. And the key is having bridge builders who can bridge the gaps between the sectors and between levels of government and really focus on outcomes and getting to the results that citizens are really looking for. And that's why we wrote the book, to provide a roadmap for effective government today. And in each chapter, we have case studies, we have stories, we have more than 100 strategies and tips from all over the world across a range of areas, from climate action to space exploration.
So how did you and Donald come up with the 10 specific points for bridge building? And what would you say is the art of bridge building, Bill?
We really looked at some of the key areas. And, you know, between us, we've done so much work on public management. And for the book, we did hundreds of interviews. And after really looking at all of that, that crystallized some of these key areas to look at, such as you need to knock down the barriers and get beyond all the existing silos. You need to figure out how do we create mutual advantage between the sectors, find areas of collaboration and where the incentives align. And really important today is understanding what the private sector purpose landscape is, where we're seeing hundreds of billions of dollars going into everything from climate action to workforce development and even human services from the private sector as part of their double and triple bottom line. And so the best governments really now are the ones that have figured out how to work with the private sector nonprofits in order to achieve more public value, help them to achieve their mission. And, you know, certainly in the UK, there's been a lot of progress in this area. A number of years ago, you had the big movement towards big society and big society capital, and how do we get a lot more private funding into areas, everyone from reentry from people who had been in prison to workforce development to homelessness. And so right now we're in a situation where government can leverage a lot more resources from the various sectors than was possible before. And that's really a key to achieving these big, broad policy goals that we have today.
So a common theme that I got from the book was the power of collaboration between both government and multiple organizations, both private and public. So is that fair for me to say then, Bill?
Absolutely. That is a key thing. And you have to figure out how to weave all these organizations together. It's incredibly complex. It requires a lot of coordination, aligning incentives, getting to shared goals, having the data systems that glue them together. One of the stories that we talk about in the book is the city of Houston's success in radically reducing homelessness. They were able to reduce homelessness by 63% over the last decade in Houston and housed 25,000 people who were previously unhoused. How did they do that? Well, one of them, they weaved together more than 100 partners across all the sectors with the Houston Coalition for the Homeless, seeing itself as a conductor of the local homeless response system orchestra. And secondly, critical to the weaving together was this coalition's data system. It helps each provider understand each homeless person's individual needs and concerns and share that information with others in the system. Now, other cities have had data hubs like this, but few cities have been effective as Houston in using it to attack the problem. And all those providers now have a single view of those individuals, what their needs are, what services they've received, and at what stage in the process they are. And that's key, having that common view of those individuals. And increasingly, then when you're talking about data sharing, we need to be sharing data across the sectors.
The first tip, which is titled Knock Down Barriers, A SOI Perspective Guarantees Failure. Do you mind touching on why this point is so imperative as well?
Well, it's so imperative in so many ways because we've created a lot of organizations that sometimes operate within silos. And that's because oftentimes it's the legislature that has mandated that and they've, according to these pre-existing boundaries. But increasingly, we're living in a boundaryless world. And these problems, as I noted with homelessness, they go across the different boundaries. So in order to be effective, you really need to create systems that cross over the boundaries, that bring down those walls between organizations so they can effectively collaborate. A great example of this in the UK is around the integrated care systems that have been created at the regional level all over the country, with the idea being that things like mental health and public health and all of those are connected together, and the social determinants and human services. And so how can we create integrated systems that acknowledge that and where we focus on this holistically as opposed to within various different silos? And so we see that as one of the biggest trends we're seeing in government around the world today is this notion of knocking down barriers, knocking walls down, and having much more collaboration across the sectors. So let me give you one more example of this from the UK is around the UK's Tell Us Once initiative around death notices. So previously, if you had an individual, a family member who had died, you might have to notify 44 different authorities in the UK afterwards. And that's it's a very trying time, very difficult time. And that took a lot of time and effort, a lot of friction. And now with the Tell Us Once initiative, you only have to notify one authority, and that information is then gotten to all of the different departments. Now that removes a huge amount of time savings you have for individuals, but also friction, and you end up with a much better experience. And it's a great example of organizing around that individual, knocking down different sort of organizational boundaries to actually help an individual get done what they need to get done in the fastest and most convenient way possible.
Brilliant. I also found the second bridge building point also very interesting. And that one's titled Seek Mutual Advantage. Shared governance builds on the mutual pursuit of shared strategies. And it's mentioned in the book that mutual advantage helps finding what favors everyone's self-interest. But Bill, how can public and private interests both be met to reach a common goal?
You know, there's so many examples when you really work towards this of finding that mutual advantage. One of the individuals that we profile in the book is John Hickenlooper, who first is mayor of Denver, then is governor of Colorado, and he's now a senator in the U.S. And every one of his major initiatives as mayor involved public-private partnerships. The mayor, he was able to raise over $295 million for efforts ranging from homelessness prevention to workforce development. And he had really an unwavering determination to work across the sectors, find points of mutual advantage for all of his major policy initiatives. And it was at the core of his model of shared governance. Now, what Mayor Hickenlooper then said, he said, government is very different than the private sector, but in both cases, people generally start with a narrow self-interest, starting with what they think they really need to get out of each negotiation. But when you get different voices at the table, it's generally not that difficult to show people what they can benefit from a broader variety of outcomes. And once you get that alignment of self-interest, you start to overlap. And that is where the transactions happen in the private sector, where you can create real change and progress in the public sector. And going back to the homeless example, everyone wants to reduce homelessness. And businesses have a very strong incentive to work with the public sector to help along those lines. And finding those inflection points, those areas of mutual advantage is really, really important. And then you just get a lot more investment into a certain area and a lot more alignment.
I do think that all the tips are very important in the book, but I also wanted to touch on number five, which is grow catalytic government. And I think it's very important because for the population in general, they will buy into change if they feel that it benefits them. So what are the ways bridge builders can be catalytic in change, Bill?
You know, I think it's actually one of the most important roles for government now. Historically, if you look back at all the different ways government has catalyzed wider societal innovation and new technologies. Ultimately, the internet, GPS, Siri, so many technological innovations arose out of first government investment in R&D. And so government has a really important role to play in wider societal innovation. And what we talk about is how can governments be catalysts by design agencies, where they're set up organizationally and in terms of their talent management to have these channels with the private sector to work closely with them. And that means using new tools and capabilities, such as you can use grants and contracts, prizes and challenges, joint ventures to help to shape markets and sustain innovation. A good example of this is the commercial space industry, which has grown so large and effective in so many ways because originally government grants really played a major role in that growth of companies like SpaceX and others through NASA, the space agency. And what NASA does is they use that, all of their tools and their toolbox, to help to grow the commercial space industry so that they have other entities also interested in space exploration, but also for finding solutions to a lot of their tough technological challenges that they have when going into space. And so they spent decades really building these strong channels for collaboration with the private sector and academia. You know, another example is in climate change. Governments across the world have recognized their critical roles as catalysts in growing the green energy industry and addressing the climate crisis. And they're using tools like regulation, tax incentives, grants to spur innovation in clean energy technologies, infrastructure, and sustainability practices. We had a number of major laws passed in the U.S. around climate and infrastructure. And the vast majority of that funding actually went into the private sector in the form of tax credits and other indirect funding tools, with the knowledge that it's going to be the private sector that's going to have to really stretch to build this new industry of green energy and focus on sustainability. So these sort of indirect tools of government through using government as catalyst are increasingly important today for addressing big problems that we have and challenges. And being able to do that effectively is increasingly important.
Absolutely. And this brings me on to bridge building point number 6, focus on outcomes. And you used a very, very good example in the book regarding the COVID vaccinations and warp speed, Operation Warp Speed rather. But what tips on focusing on outcomes would you say is important in ensuring its success?
We really emphasize that need to really focus on outcomes and not just process. Too oftentimes we see this focus on process and that doesn't lead to the outcomes you need. So you may have checked all the boxes around something, but you haven't achieved the outcomes you need. And so a focus on outcomes means that you're going to get alignment in terms of what those goals are, and whether through contracts or other public-private partnerships, you're going to help fund those goals. And then you're going to give the different partners in this effort a lot of flexibility in reaching them. So if you look at the vaccine development, Operation Warp Speed in the US and similar models in other countries, It was really historic. It usually takes 7 years or longer for a new vaccine. It was completed in 6 months through a public-private collaboration. And the way it worked was that Operation Warp Speed pushed really hard to guide the development, approval, and manufacturing of vaccines at scale from a single U.S. manufacturing facility to a whole nationwide network of laboratories and factories. They helped to backstop some of the pharmaceutical companies financially, which freed them to invest heavily in vaccine development. And they reduced some of the risk from pharmaceutical companies through the funding and also lowered regulatory barriers, making it easier for agencies, companies, and nonprofits to produce results without being stuck in process concerns. And they had this very clear, universally desirable goal. And at the same time, they left plenty of room for innovation by individual companies. Individual pharmaceutical companies could compete fiercely for successful vaccines, while at the same time, everyone had this major goal in mind. And you can apply that to so many different areas when you look at social outcomes that we want to achieve or individual programs like child welfare. A focus on outcomes as opposed to inputs or outputs is really, really important.
On the contrary, though, Bill, I guess it brings the question, if government is blended, it will open the floodgates for questioning who is responsible for what.
Well, that's actually one of the big challenges, absolutely, of this new system, which is a much more horizontal system. And so the old model of accountability, which was very sort of hierarchical based and so on, it doesn't work very well in this context. And so we really need new accountability mechanisms. And what we talk about is a number of steps you need to take. First of all, focusing on stepping away from just the how, again, the process to the what. What are the outcomes that you want to achieve? Secondly, You want to focus on organizing agencies to ensure strong connections and minimal friction with the partners on the inside. You want to surround the effort with equity, making sure that bridge building really has established rules to ensure fair and equitable treatment of individuals. You want to make people a key asset instead of seeing employees as cogs in a machine. Bridge building really sees them as repositories of expertise and really the most valuable of the organization's assets. And then making the process and the conversations very transparent. Instead of an internal process of accountability, bridge builders really make information about outcomes clear and readily available to everyone, including the public. And so starting to build this new system of accountability, which is outcome focused, is the way to go as we ensure that we can get all these things done. We can get them done quickly and more efficiently, but also have accountability for the different players who are involved in actually producing those outcomes.
Absolutely. I suppose another question that might be raised as well is whether it's dangerous for governments to rely more on private help, Bill. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say that this is something that we've seen really for decades now. We go back all the way to whether it's the Manhattan Project, which relied on 20,000 different industrial firms in academia back in World War II, or putting a man on the moon, which involved over 70,000 different contractors and academics and so on. So if you look at how we've tackled big problems over time, it has been through this much more of a networked-based approach. And as problems get more complicated, as society becomes more complex, as even business is moving towards more ecosystem-based models, this is really the reality that we're dealing with today. And yes, there are challenges for sure. Government needs to be a smart buyer. You need to make sure that costs don't get out of control. You need to make sure that you don't have fraud in the system and other sort of things. But what we argue is that if this is the reality of government today, then we need to be very, very effective at doing this. This is one of the most, if not the most important skill you need as a government official today. And it requires more information, not less of it. And it requires a lot of agility and adaptiveness and working there. But we're not going to go back to a system, if we ever even had one, where government is doing all of these things by itself. It's engaged in these partnerships all over the world. And that's been increasing because technology is more and more sophisticated, because the private sector has been moving towards a purpose-based approach. And then just the need for agility, which you're going to need to rely on a lot of these private partners. If you go back to the Blair government in the UK, a big thing that they did then was really try to grow civil society, with the understanding that a much larger civil society foundation sector, along with private sector, was going to be key to delivering services and solving big societal problems.
You know, another question I actually wanted to ask you was, did any of your perspectives change whilst putting this book together, you and Don putting this book together, or had you brought all your experience into it to the extent where when you was writing it, you was very sure of what the 10 tips are and this is what you've come up with?
Oh gosh, I would hope that we would not be that way. Of course, and between us, we've written just about 35 books, as I mentioned. And so whenever you go into writing a book, your perspectives change all the time based on new information, new interviews, new data. And that was really, really critical here. Certainly, we brought 75 years of experience to the table writing this book. But there's a lot of surprises and new information and going very deeper into various areas. And, you know, one of the things that we we found was we were trying to think of any service, any big problem that mattered that can be accomplished by a single organization. And we really thought we would come up with a variety of them. But in the end, as you dig deeper into various areas, we couldn't come up with any. And it really showed us that nowadays, even something like fire departments, which rely so heavily in terms of reduced fires on better building codes and working with architects, working with building inspectors and EMS, that's another example of it's become more of an all-purpose sort of aid agency. So we've been, I think a lot of what we found certainly confirmed some of our previous beliefs, but we certainly learned so many new things through all of the interviews and case studies that we did in the book.
Brilliant. And lastly, Bill, while putting the book together, who did you have in mind that you wanted to read or listen to the book?
We actually wrote the book for a whole range of readers. Most obviously, government managers who face the challenge of leading these collaborative partnerships. So we've got all sorts of tips for them. For governments, private and nonprofit partners, we lay out the context of their work and how it connects with the quest for public interest. There's a review of the book recently that said from someone who's also serves on nonprofit boards, and he said, everyone who works in a nonprofit, who leads these organizations, should also read this book to understand the landscape. And then there's scholars. We believe scholars will find the book's fresh approach in expanding the role of existing public management theory important. And that will in turn make the book useful for students who seek to learn that theory and want to become successful leaders in the public service. And lastly, for citizens themselves who want to understand how government really works and how policymakers can best improve it. We think they're going to be intrigued by the stories of effective government in action and effective working across the sectors.
That was William D. Eggers, co-author of the book, Bridge Builders: How Government Can Transcend Boundaries to Solve Big Problems. The book and audiobook is available now, which I do recommend you to pick up and read or to give a listen to. A big thank you to William for coming on the podcast, and thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate the podcast and check out some of the previous ones if you haven't done already. And until then, I'll catch you on the next.